1320 WILS. Well, look, it's not clear what the future of the Department of Education is going to be, but when it comes to the job it's been doing so far, my next guest says it's been absolutely dismal. Vicki Alger joins us. She's the author of the new book, Failure, The Federal Miseducation of America's Children. Miseducation spelled with a K. Vicki, great to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Yes, and you've been studying education issues for how long now?
Oh, gosh, probably about more than 15 years, actually.
And what led you to take such an interest in this topic?
Well, I've always been passionate about education, and I, as a girl growing up, I went to both public schools, private schools, and so I grew up. I wish there were charter schools when I was growing up. I probably would have attended those, too. So I lived it, and finding that right fit, even within families, what can work for one sibling isn't necessarily the best fit for another.
Were you moving around a lot, or how did you end up going to all these schools?
No. I started off in public schools and then went to private. It was about getting the best fit and the best education.
Now, in the book, you go back in time, and you say that for nearly 100 years, the federal government had nothing really to do with education, right?
No, absolutely not. That was handled at the local community, and if children couldn't afford tuition, there were philanthropic and religious organizations that took care of it.
And how good was the education during that time period, would you say?
Well, all the available evidence shows that attendance rates were as high or better, so were literacy rates and so forth. Mm-hmm. Children, of course, didn't go to school as long as they do now, but all the evidence indicates that they had a very solid education.
The 1979 comes along, and President Jimmy Carter, he creates the Department of Education. What led to that?
Well, those of us, you know, alive at that time will recall that reorganization was all the rage, and the results for education were not good. We saw record low college entrance exam scores, so on and so forth. And so the thinking was, well, maybe if we just restructure things and we put the expertise of D.C., we somehow, you know, concentrate that, it'll flow back through to the states. We've obviously seen now that D.C. does not know best, and what we see from mountains of scientific research is that when we put parents in charge, schools have to compete for students and their associated funding. That's what improves student achievement.
Tell me this, by the way, Vicki Alger is the author of the brand new book, Failure, The Federal Miseducation of America's Children. What is it that's causing that? Why has the Department of Education been so unsuccessful?
Well, it boils down to this. There's no way a relative handful of people, no matter how well-intentioned, could possibly know what the best education is for 50 million school children. The ones who know and love their children best are parents, and it's so critically important not to advance a sort of one-size-fits-all mold. We really need to have a variety of education providers, public and private, so that children can get the sort of approaches, curriculum,
right,
environment.
And they can get individual focus. But you said back in the 70s when the department was created, things were not going well. Why was that happening?
There was the only ones who could afford parental choice were folks who could afford to pay out-of-pocket tuition on top of very high taxes. So we basically had a constrained market.
So you're saying the local public schools were not performing back then before the department was created?
Absolutely. There was little appreciable competition from choice.
I see. So now, what power does the department really have? How do they influence our local schools?
Oh, I think one of the most glaring examples right now would be Common Core. Any state that tried out for a Race to the Top grant, a condition of getting federal dollars, which let's not forget our tax dollars coming back to us through Washington. Mm-hmm. Any state that wanted to get some more federal dollars had to agree to what are called college and career ready standards. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing the implementation of that.
Let me ask you, in terms of the education, do you not believe there should be a baseline of knowledge that all American children should be taught?
Oh, sure. And there are no shortage of national and national basic skills tests, international examinations. We have the nation's report card. There's no shortages of measurements to see, objective measurements to see how children are performing. That's not the problem.
Yeah, but in terms of the Common Core, is the idea not to teach a curriculum that prepares students for at least the basics of what they'll need?
Well, that's how it's being pitched, but if you actually look at the standards, see how they're implemented, for example, let's try college readiness. College readiness measured by Common Core means you're just barely missing remedial education classes at community colleges. And there was no shortage of really great academic standards. California and Massachusetts for math and English come to mind immediately. So one of the dangers of having just one yardstick is if you get it wrong, you've just inflicted it all across the country. Rather than look in the states, who's doing continuous improvement, who's got genuinely world-class standards, let's emulate them.
I should note, in Michigan, we see study after study showing that we're falling behind other states. We're not doing as well as we did 10, 20 years ago. Any thoughts on why that's happening?
Well, I would be careful that in any given year, an assessment given at a point of time, you're going to see little fluctuations here and there. Also, keep in mind that schools are adjusting to a seismic shift, getting ready, you know, with the new Common Core standards. Mm-hmm. So we're going to see dips anytime we change a state assessment. Mm-hmm. But I think a real long-term measure would be the nation's report card, which is, say, essentially the same since the early 70s. So we can see proficiency rates in the basic subjects, core subjects.
Well, we've got districts here where we have single-digit proficiency rates in high school for things like math and science. What do you make of that?
Well, it's tragic, and there's no excuse for it, because as a country, we spend just about more than anyone else. I think sometimes Liechtenstein and Sweden might spend a few $100 more per student than we do. But money is not the excuse. Are we directing precious resources to what matters most, not administrative Taj Mahals or all the bells and whistles? We need to make sure we have top-flight educators in our children's classrooms who have been expertly trained, who are getting paid. And there's no good reason with all the money we're spending that our great educators can't be paid as well as engineers.
Do you think teachers are underpaid right now?
I think the good ones are.
Mm-hmm. Well, so hopefully most of them are at least decent. Vicki Alger, author of the book Failure, The Federal Miseducation of America's Children. Is that a good idea to end the Department of Education?
I think so, too. We need to restore truly local control.
Like, just get rid of the department completely?
Absolutely. Return all the funds to the states and let parents, voters, and taxpayers decide what programs they want in their states and what programs they want to pay for.
Is there any initial consequence to doing that, or would things just roll on smoothly?
Well, I think the mechanics of dismantling the Department of Education are pretty straightforward. The politics, however, are not. But I think a first step would be, we need to do an inventory of every single Department of Education program and see what's actually working, because that's not something we're doing now. We're just spending more money, and we have, at best, we have no evidence of effectiveness.
Because at Common Core, we hear a lot about, when you talk about the other programs, what kinds of other things are they up to?
Well, for example, Title I funding, probably one of the single largest programs we have under the originally called the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, enacted in 1965. This was another really well-intentioned program to give additional funds to schools that enroll large proportions of socioeconomically disadvantaged children to make sure that money's not a problem.
Where's that gone wrong?
Where that's gone wrong is the money is not going to really helping improve the learning of these children. We're seeing across the board that these children still have consistently low proficiency rates. Mm-hmm. So we're spending more and we're getting the same result. If that's not the definition of insanity, I don't know what is. Where we are seeing tremendous progress would be in various school choice programs. For example, in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. the D.C. Opportunity Scholarship Program, charter schools, home schools, where we have to stop thinking that just spending more is going to translate to better results.
And now we've got these online schools where kids could just...
Absolutely.
Is that really a healthy thing for kids to just sit at home and do their classwork there?
Well, it depends. It's going to depend on the program, but I can tell you, particularly for students if they have special needs or health issues, or you know they learn more quickly or need more time, these programs can be a real lifeline for these students. And I think the more options children have to meet them where they are and take them where they need to be, the better.
Yeah. And your view is what, as many choice schools as we can, as we want, or should there be any limit at all to that? Or?
No, I think the very last thing we should be doing is limiting parents' options and limiting innovation, because one of the things I think is the best policy development to come out in decades is, I'm very proud that my home state of Arizona was the first state to do this, mm-hmm. is education savings accounts. If a parent, for whatever reason, doesn't prefer a public school education, our state deposits 90% of what it would have sent to the public school into a designated account for that child instead. Mm-hmm. Parents get a designated use debit card, and they pick all the educational services and providers that they want, and they have to submit quarterly expense receipts and get verified to make sure that the money is being spent as it should be.
One last thing, Vicki. The teachers' unions, we have a big one here, the Michigan Education Association. do you think they have some value? Do you think teachers do need to have that kind of organization?
From my perspective, you want to join a union, great. You don't want a union, pardon me, join a union, that's fine too. I think where we get into problems is when we violate people's freedom of, you know, freedom of association rights. We force people to join into a union that goes beyond just a professional membership. It goes into all sorts of politics that people may or may not agree with. We have to focus on education and professionalism and leave the politics aside.
And Michigan actually just passed right to work a few years ago, so that has changed the dynamics here. Vicki Alger, the book Failure, The Federal Miseducation of America's Children. She breaks it all down, goes back to how we ended up where we are today. Vicki, thank you very much.
Thank you.